Welcome to Gospel Truth with Andrew Womack, a teaching ministry that emphasizes God's unconditional love and grace. And now, here's Andrew.
Welcome to our Friday's broadcast of the Gospel Truth. Today I'm continuing a series talking about the believer's authority. This is the end of my second week of teaching on this. I've already covered a lot of material. If you haven't heard all of this, I encourage you to please get our materials. If you have heard all of this, if you've listened to every program, you need to still get these materials. Because I'm saying some things that are radically different, and you just don't hear this often enough. You need to study it. I've got DVDs and CDs on this subject, and then I've got a brand new book entitled The Believer's Authority, What You Didn't Learn in Church. And I think this would be a blessing. Plus, we have a nearly 400-page study guide that is specifically for the purpose of helping you teach Bible studies or Sunday school class or disciple someone. There's a CD-ROM in there that you can print out the questions with the answers, all of the scriptures that are used, and it's just a great, great tool. But I've already covered that we're in a spiritual war. This week, I've been talking about what kind of power or authority does our enemy have. And I've been trying to counter the concept that most believers have that Satan is an angelic being who has superior, superhuman powers and abilities. And what I'm trying to establish is that Satan, it did not oppress man. He didn't come in with a lion or something to intimidate Eve and make her submit unto him because he had no power to do that. I don't believe in a pre-Adamic civilization. And I know that some of you do. I could debate that. I could go into a lot of stuff. But I'm saying that if you just be honest, the scriptures that are used to establish that there's a pre-Adamic civilization are pretty sketchy. And it depends on interpretation. Like, for instance, in Genesis chapter 1, where the Lord created Adam and Eve, and he said, "Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth." And people will take that word replenish and say, see, that shows that it was depleted at one time and it had to be replenished. Did you know that that whole argument is based on a lack of understanding of words? The word replenish does not mean that the earth was plenished at one time and it had to be replenished, like recall. You've already called, now you got to recall. No, it's like the word receive. When you say that you're going to receive something, does that mean that you have sieved before? See, that's a lack of understanding the English language. It's true that the R-E prefix can sometimes mean to do again or to do over, but also it is not limited to that. When it says replenish, that is not a proof that there was a pre-Adamic civilization and the world at one time was populated and fruitful and all of this, and then it was destroyed. And Genesis 1-2 is a recreation of the earth. I could go through every one of the scriptures. I've studied those things. This really was never found in church history until about the time that Phineas Dake popularized this in his Bible. He's the one that really gave credence to this. So this is relatively a new doctrine. And I believe that it's attractive to people because it apparently harmonizes the ancient age of the earth that scientists come up with the relatively short account that the Bible gives. And anyway, I'm not going to get into all of that. But I don't believe in this pre-Adamic civilization. I don't believe that Satan was down here and ruled some kingdom. And then when he was in the garden, he was this demonic power. I was using these verses at the close of yesterday's program, and I didn't have time to finish. So let me go back to Ezekiel chapter 28, and in verse 12, it says, "Son of man, take up a lamentation upon the king of Tyrus." And I shared yesterday, this isn't talking about the physical person. It's talking about the demonic power that operates through him. And you can see that as it goes on and says these things. It says, "And say unto him, thus saith the Lord God, thou sealest up the sum, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was thy covering." Again, let me just point out, when he says, "Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God," this isn't talking about the physical man, the king of Tyrus, because when God drove Adam and Eve out of the garden, he put a cherub there with a flaming sword to keep the way of the tree of life, and no man has ever entered into Eden again. and we don't know exactly what happened. There is a tree of life that's in heaven, and it's revealed in the book of Revelation that this tree of life is there. So it's possible that maybe God transported the garden, or at least the tree, into heaven, or the Garden of Eden as it was originally has become desert or something, but nobody has ever been there again. This isn't talking about the king of Tyrus was there. It's talking about Lucifer, this angelic being, was in the Garden of Eden, and it describes how he was. He wasn't in his fallen state, but it says, every precious stone was thy covering. The sardis, topaz, the diamond, the beryl, the onyx, the jasper, the sapphire, the emerald, and the carbuncle in gold. The workmanship of thy tabrets and of thy pipes was prepared in thee in the day that thou wast created. Thou art the anointed cherub. Again, the word cherub is talking about an angelic being. Same thing was done over in Ezekiel chapter 1, Ezekiel chapter 10. Says, thou art the anointed cherub that covereth, and I have set thee so. Thou wast upon the holy mountain of God. Thou hast walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. Thou wast perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created till iniquity was found in thee. By the multitude of thy merchandise have they filled the midst of thee with violence and thy sin. Therefore I will cast thee as profane out of the mountain of God, and I will destroy thee, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. Thy heart was lifted up because of thy beauty. Thou hast corrupted thy wisdom by reason of thy brightness. I will cast thee to the ground. I will lay thee before kings that they may behold thee. And he goes on and continues to talk about it. But my point for reading these verses, it's definitely talking about an angelic being, because it was in the garden, which nobody was in the garden but Adam and Eve, certainly not the king of Tyrus. It calls him the anointed cherub. It talks about types and pipes and tabrets being inside of him. That's certainly not true of just a person. It talks about that he was perfect. He was the anointed cherub. He is going to be cast out of the holy mountain of God. All of these references make it very clear that this is talking about an angelic being. And if you put this together with Isaiah chapter 14, which also talks about an angelic being who is in rebellion towards God, and in Isaiah chapter 14, it just specifically calls him Lucifer, the son of the morning. So this is in Isaiah chapter 14, and let me read verse 4. Thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon. Again, it's talking about like this was a person, but as you read it, it's obvious it's not the physical person, but it's the demonic power who operated through these princes and rulers. So it says, take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how hath the oppressor ceased the golden city? The Lord hath broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. He who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke, he that ruled the nations in anger, is persecuted and none hindereth. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing. Yea, the fir trees rejoice at thee, and the cedars of Lebanon, saying, since thou art laid down, no feller is come up against us. You know, being from Texas, I used to interpret that as no person has come up against us. That's the way we talk in Texas. But this is talking about that no person who cuts trees down, a feller, is come up against us. Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. It hath raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. All they shall speak and say unto thee, art thou also become weak as we? Art thou become like unto us? Thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy vials, the worm is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer? Now see, up until this time, you might have been able to apply some of these things to just the physical person, the king of Babylon. But now it makes this very clear that this isn't talking about just the person, but the spiritual power behind him. And it says, how art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer? Son of the morning, how art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High God. You know, this gives us some insight into Satan, that Satan didn't hate God. in the sense that he just disliked everything God was and everything he stood for. Rather, Satan was envious of God. He admired God. He was jealous of God so much that he wanted all of the glory and the honor that went to him. And if you put this together with Ezekiel 28, those other verses we read, that, and if you accept, now this is not absolutely clear in Scripture, but it implies that Satan was this anointed cherub that had these pipes and tabrets in him. And if he was leading the praise and the worship, and if he was giving all of this glory and honor unto God that we see in the book of Revelation, how they just are constantly praising him day and night, well then, you know, it's kind of understandable that as he was giving all of this praise and this honor and glory, that he just envied him so much he wanted to be like him, just like these verses. He said, I will ascend into the heights of the cloud. I will be like the Most High God. See, today many people think that God, Satan just hates everything that is of God. Well, I believe that Satan has come to hate God because he's been totally destroyed by him. His kingdom has been destroyed. God has beat him at every hand. And I don't doubt that there's hatred in Satan right now for God, but originally it wasn't hatred, it was envy and jealousy. He wanted the glory that was going towards God. And this is why Satan gets so incensed when you praise God, because he always wanted that praise. He wanted to sit in the position. He wanted everybody to worship him. And when you worship God, Satan is an absolute egomaniac that just cannot stand to see God get the thing that he's always desired. And when you go to praising God, it just drives the devil up a wall. There are scriptural examples of demons fleeing as praise entered. I believe that this is the principle behind why we enter into his gates with praise and into his courts with thanksgiving. Why in our services we start with a song service that glorifies and praises God, because it just drives the devil out. Satan cannot stand that kind of stuff. Man, this is great insight into what was going on. In verse 15 it says, yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness and destroyed the cities thereof, that opened not the house of his prisoners? All the kings of the nations, even all of them, lie in glory, every one in his own house. But thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch, and as the raiment of those that are slain, thrust through with the sword, and go down into the stones of the pit, as a carcass trodden underfoot. Thou shalt not be joined with them in burial, because thou hast destroyed thy land and slain thy people. The seed of evildoers shall never be renowned. And on it goes. This is showing that Lucifer rebelled at God out of jealousy, wanted the glory that went to God, and yet he failed. He would be thrown down. And it says everybody who sees him. I believe that when we are taken up to be with the Lord, or when the Lord comes back and we get a glorified body and we know all things, even as also we are known, and when we're able to see Satan, instead of seeing this imposing demonic power, this evil force that intimidates and inspires awe, I think that we're going to see this wretched being that has, you know, if you look at people who've lived in sin, and you can see how sin has affected them, and I mean their bodies are messed up, their face is contorted, there's just all kinds of terrible things going on, I believe Satan is going to be the most wretched, vile-looking thing. We're going to look at him and say, this is the one that I let terrorize me, that I was afraid of, that intimidated me. And one of the reasons that God's going to wipe tears away from our eyes is not just because of all the things we've suffered, but when we get to heaven and see how awesome the power and authority God gave us is, and compared to how wretched our adversary was, we're going to be kicking ourselves. We're going to be crying. We're going to be saying, oh, God, no. I can't believe I lived a substandard life when this being is the one that oppressed me. And God's going to have to wipe tears away from our eyes and do something supernaturally to make heaven heaven. Many of us would be mourning the rest of eternity if it wasn't for God's ability. This is the way it's describing the devil. So I use these verses just to say this, that Satan, I believe, was still, or let me use the right terminology, Lucifer was still a godly being, the anointed cherub that covered, according to Ezekiel 28, in the Garden of Eden. And he was not put there by God as this evil being to see if his new creation, God's new creation, could just withstand. No, he was there to help. He had no power to hurt. That's the reason he didn't come and force Adam and Eve into subjection. He had to tempt them because his power was totally void to be able to make them do anything. Adam and Eve had control over this whole earth. And Satan was a spiritual being. That's why he had to use an animal. He had to enter into this serpent to even gain access to him. And Satan had to just tempt them. And when they rebelled, they are the ones that empowered the devil. In that sense, mankind created Satan, not God. God created Lucifer, a godly being, but all of his supernatural power and authority as an angel, I believe, ceased to operate. He didn't use supernatural angelic power to oppress Adam and Eve. He just deceived them. And Adam and Eve made Satan the god of this world. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 4 says, if any believe not, it's because the god of this world has blinded their eyes. That's talking about Satan. And it calls him the god of this world. God really originally created Adam and Eve and mankind to be the god over this world. Psalms 82, verse 6. The Lord quoted that verse and said, are ye not all gods? Not gods in the capital G sense, but gods, absolute dictators, rulers. God gave us an unconditional authority. And when Satan saw this, he saw something that he didn't have. He saw that God, who would never go back on his word, had given Adam and Eve authority to rule this earth without any conditions. And so, you know, here's another comparison that'll help you to understand this. If you were trying to rob a bank, and if you went in and if all you had was one gun, and yet there was 50 bank guards or 5 bank guards, whatever, and they had automatic weapons and they had the ability to call the police and do all this, you're outgunned. You're outmanned. There's no way that you can overcome their firepower. You know how you could go in and rob a bank against that superior force? You go in and take a hostage, and you take a person. And even though they may not feel bad about shooting you and killing you, if they try and shoot you or do anything, you're going to kill this hostage. And they feel for the hostage. They don't want to hurt the hostage. And so, even though there might be 50 armed guards who could all overcome you, you know what? That person can rob that bank and escape by taking that hostage, and they'll let you go because they don't want to hurt the hostage. Well, in a sense, Satan knew that he could never just directly go against God. God's power was superior to his. But what he did was tempt us. We became his hostage voluntarily. We submitted to him. And now, if God had come down and just said, Lucifer, that's it. I'm going to destroy you, or I'm going to cast you into the pit. I will not allow you to operate in the earth. First of all, he would have violated his word to mankind, because he says, you rule. You do what you want to. You give it to who you want to. It's yours. And he would have been taking back his word. He wouldn't have been upholding his word. And if he would have done anything to hurt Lucifer, well, then he would have also have had to have judged Adam and Eve, because they willingly submitted unto Lucifer. So in a sense, it was like mankind was the hostage, and Satan was counting on the fact that God loved Adam and Eve to such a degree that he would not kill them and destroy them in an effort to get to him. Now, I believe that God had given the control of this earth over to mankind, but he still owned it. In, I believe it, Psalms says, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, they and all who dwell therein. And yet, in Psalms 115, verse 16, it says the heavens, even the heavens are the Lord's, but the earth hath he given to the sons of man. There's no conflict between those two. They're both correct. God gave the control of this earth to mankind, but he still owned it. I believe that God could have wiped out the earth. He could have killed all men. He had the authority to do that, but he didn't have the authority to come down and just intervene in our affairs and change it when he said, you rule. Well, men were ruling, and they gave that authority to the devil. So God couldn't touch the devil without touching his people. So in that sense, God allowed Satan to become the god of this world because man allowed it. And God wouldn't hurt the hostage. And this is why Jesus became a man. When Jesus became a physical man, then in a sense, you know what happened? It would be like in a hostage situation. If you had somebody with a whole group of hostages, and if all of them have, you know, explosive wired to them or something, and they're threatening to blow them all up if you don't do what I tell you. Well, you know what would happen? What would happen if you could get the greatest crime fighter, the greatest person on the side of right to become one of the hostages? And then the person who took the hostages would be in big trouble because there is their nemesis right there in their midst. Well, this is what Jesus did. Jesus became a man and became one of the hostages so that he could redeem and set all of the hostages free. Man, to me, that's a great picture. And one of the things that this does, see, it answers a bunch of questions, and it shows me that Satan is not a superhuman creation. I believe that Lucifer was superhuman. He had power and authority. Of course, angels could do things that no physical human being could do. They can zip places. They can go through walls because they're spirit beings. Angels went out and killed 186,000 men in one night during the days of Hezekiah. The death angel killed all the firstborn in the land of Egypt. Angels have superhuman power. And I believe that Lucifer had that, but he couldn't use that against us. The power that he has been using against the human race, against you and me, is nothing but human power and authority that God gave us. And that's the reason that he has to have cooperation from you. This is the reason that I don't care if you're a lost man. If you've not been born again, Satan can't just force you to do things. Now, ultimately, Satan is going to beat any lost man because they've got a fallen nature. And even if they live a relatively good life and prosper and live in health and have good relationships, they're going to die and go to hell. And so that would be an ultimate defeat. But I'm saying that even a lost man does not necessarily have the devil just steamroll them. It says in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, that Satan, as a roaring lion, goes about seeking whom he may devour. He cannot devour everybody. Even non-Christians, he can't just devour them all. You have to cooperate. And if you will live a godly life, again, godliness, holiness doesn't produce salvation, but it does limit Satan's inroad. And Satan isn't free to just oppress every person, even non-Christians. But when you get born again, you add to this that you're without your consent and cooperation, Satan can't do anything. And then you add to that, that now you have the power and the authority of the name of Jesus. And Satan is just a speck that is nothing to the born again, spirit-filled, authority believer. And if you understand this, I guarantee you, it will totally change the way you relate to God. I'm out of time today, but next week I'm going to continue this teaching. I would like to encourage you to listen to our announcer. He's going to give you information about this new book, our new study guide. Please listen and then call or write today.
The Believer's Authority is available for the very first time in book form and can be ordered through bookstores nationwide. Or you can receive a copy when you send a gift of any amount for the work of this ministry. Request book T327 when you write or call or when you go to our website. A Spanish version is also available. Request book T735. The Believer's Authority Companion Study Guide is available for a gift of $35 or more. Request study guide T427 when you contact the ministry. Andrew's complete teaching titled, The Believer's Authority, was recorded live at a recent Gospel Truth seminar. It's available on DVD for a gift of any amount. Request DVD album T3205D when you contact us. You can also get Andrew's teaching as seen on TV. It's available on either CD or DVD when you send a gift of any amount. Request CD album T1045C or DVD album T1045D when you contact us. The second teaching in the audio CD album titled Who Made Satan is also available for a gift of any amount. We encourage everyone to give, but if you're simply unable to afford it, Andrew and his partners will provide this second CD free of charge. Request teaching number TL19 when you write or call, and we'll be pleased to send it to you. You can use your credit card to order by telephone. Our helpline number is 719-635-1111. Helpline hours are from 4 a.m. until 9:30 p.m. Mountain Time. Or you can reach us through our website where you can order ministry materials online at awmi.net. If you prefer to write to us, our address is Andrew Womack Ministries, P.O. Box 3333, Colorado Springs, 80934. We appreciate your generosity. We hope to hear from you today.
If you just know what God told you to do, then it's not a challenge, it's an adventure.
I wasn't ready to make a commitment until I really knew that this was God.
So we decided that, okay, from this point on, we're not going to speak to each other, we're not going to write, we're not going to be in contact.
I gave up marriage and I thought, all right, that's it.
I need to read the Bible. I need to find out what it says. I need to find out who God is.
We could be dropped from a helicopter anywhere on the subcontinent of India, and somehow God was going to direct us.
God has given us a plan, and we're seeing people change forever. And it's not just surface, it is inner spirit.
We'd like to point out Andrew's upcoming speaking schedule. He'll be in Chicago, Illinois for a Gospel Truth seminar May 7th through the 9th, and in Amsterdam, Holland for the Eurospirit Conference May 21st through the 23rd. He'll also be in Raleigh, North Carolina for a Gospel Truth seminar June 11th through the 13th, and in Colorado Springs for the annual Summer Family Bible Conference June 29th through July 3rd. For more details on Andrew's next meeting in your area, call our helpline or visit our website at awmi.net.
One moment. There's power and significance in one moment. And at 200 miles an hour on the racetrack, each moment comes at you pretty quick. One moment can make the difference between life and death, victory and defeat, success and failure. In my life, I've had moments of joy and moments of pain. But no moment in my life is more powerful or significant than the one moment spent on my knees in prayer. It's in these moments of prayer that God gives me strength, direction, peace, and hope. Throughout my life, my heart has been changed through prayer. And if it can change one heart, then it can change the heart of a nation. The National Day of Prayer is the first Thursday in May. Join me, your family, and friends, and let's unite in prayer for our nation.
Be part of the National Day of Prayer, the first Thursday in May, nationaldayofprayer.org.